The revolution will be broadcast.
Doesn't that sound exciting to you?
World to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your ghost banded demon hunter show, Demon Hunter.
Yes, sir. I'm here. I'm sitting right here, right next to you, halfway across the
place. Must be Sunday night again, because we're going to thank all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Twitch. That's Twitch TV, guys. You want to check that out? Twitch.tv/ghost and demon. The SYL Project. Give some love. Share some love. Everybody needs love. The SYLproject.com. Check them out. Attentive Home Health Care. That's right, guys. AttentiveHomeHealthCare.com. Good people in Indianapolis, Indiana, ready to help the people that you love. Paranormal A Radio Network. Thanks, everybody around the world, for being so cool and having our backs. Yeah. Yeah, studio.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
They have our backs. There's not knives in our back.
There is no knives in our backs. Anyway, guys, we are back here in studio, like we were saying before, and oh my God, what a week it has been. What a week.
It has been a week, sir.
Yes.
I don't remember it, but it's been a week.
It has been a week. Nathan apparently died almost from some funky bug, right?
Mm.
The zombie bug?
It took its effect on me. I think I've got to stop hanging out with werewolves in the middle of the night.
Werewolves.
It's having its effect on me.
Werewolves get a bad rap.
I'm starting to sound like Wolfgang Jack over here.
Absolutely. Hey, we mentioned last week that we had won the Zombie Beaver Award for Best Host Team for 2016 for Paranormal A. Thanks, guys, again. That's our last time thanking you for that. I had it in my notes. I had to go back.
Are you using last week's notes again? Be sure you introduce the right guest this evening.
Yes, we're going to have to do the right guest. But yeah, man, you had that whole thing going on. I've had a crazy week.
Scotty, beat me up.
Exactly, with healthcare issues here. I need to call Attentive Home.
They rebuilt you. You're bionic now, right?
I am bionic. I got hurt at work, guys. This is what happened. See, that's why we need you to go to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, share it with as many of the people as you can out there, so one day we don't have to remain, you know, lunch bell type work. I 16 years with the company, I got hurt at work. And all of a sudden, something pops up on my knee. You know, it's just a little knot or whatever, and it turns into a whole Roto-Rooter service, man. They had to disconnect ligaments from bones and stitch them back, and just hearing about a knee injury, you know what I mean? Just hearing about the knee injuries makes me squirm. It does. It makes me squirm. Does it make you squirm, knee injuries?
I've had so many of them.
Scotty,
at this
beat
point.
Me up.
And eventually they're just going to have to take my knee out and replace it with a brand new one. That's what they're going to have to do.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's going to happen to all of us. Anybody that's in perpetual motion,
yes,
sooner or later with moving joints is going to have. So what happened with your sickness, werewolf sickness, you said?
Werewolf sickness, yes. Apparently I don't remember what happens on the full moons anymore. Now, I just was at a lunch on my birthday. You remember last Sunday was my birthday?
Yes, I do.
And somebody kept coughing right next to me. And when they got up and turned around to leave, they literally coughed, and I felt it hit the side of my face.
No!
It was one of those most disgusting moments where I literally just looked up at him and was like, you have to be kidding me. And apologies passed by, and he walked out. And I went in the bathroom and washed my face and came back out. But 2 days later, you might as well have just buried me,
right?
Because I was dying and pumped full of antibiotics and everything under the sun, and you can still hear it in there. I still have it in there, and it's just because, you know, the zombie virus is floating around out there, and now I'm probably infected. And
see, think about how easy that would be. I mean, for a virus to spread like that. So, you know, if one person had a zombie bug and it was passed through sneezing or coughing, we're all dead. I mean, it would be a matter of time before we Shot done. Hey, guys, that reminds me, zombie bugs and snot and burgers and all that stuff. If you want to follow us on Twitter, it's at Ghost and Demon, guys. That's our thing. At Ghost and Demon. Go on the old Twitter machine. Yeah, send us a tweet. Tell Nathan and me what you think of our show. What guest you want? What guest you want to see? What questions you have for the guest? Or, better yet, go to twitch.tv/ghostanddemon. Get in the chat room like, I don't know, humans. And send us a message for tonight's guest, and we'll get all those questions. This is the only show that I know of that allows you to get up close and personal. You, the Shadow Nation, the listeners, with our guest, and get to ask them questions. We do all the hard work for you guys can talk to them.
That's right, folks. Don't be radio zombies. Get involved. Be human.
Stay in school. Don't be a tool. Tonight's guest. Do you like that?
I think I've heard that one.
Stay in school. Don't be a tool. That's, you remember that. It was ABC Weekend Special or whatever. Anyway, guys, tonight's guest, he's an American actor who made his professional debut in the New York Shakespeare Festival production of Hamlet. Since then, he's brought thrills and chills to your televisions and the silver screen. Best known for his work on such films as Midnight Madness, Hot Dog, the movie, and of course, the horror cult classic, An American Werewolf in London. The werewolf himself, Mr. David Naughton, is going to be here in the studio tonight. Hopefully, we got some milk bones for him. It won't tear up the studio too much. But yeah, David Naughton is here tonight. The American Werewolf in London. I don't think he's in London tonight, though.
Whenever I think werewolf anymore, I know it wasn't a werewolf.
Yeah.
And the milk bones might have hit the button there. But the scene in Ghostbusters where the terror dog is coming down on Rick Moranis. Goes, good puppy. Maybe I have a milk bone around here somewhere.
Good pooch. Yeah, I remember that. You know, I was thinking about that this weekend. I went to the movies, got to catch a flick, and hurt leg and all. And I had to sit on the aisle for my leg to dangle out or whatever because it's been up for the last 3 days.
And you know somebody's just going to walk right into that leg.
Oh, you know, yeah. But I was lucky. It didn't happen. But I was thinking about that with the Ghostbusters is coming out, and it has an all-female cast. Mm-hmm. I love ladies. We all love ladies. No sexism here or nothing like that. But to go from an all-male cast, mm-hmm. pretty much, to an all-female cast, that's a huge change.
That's a big jump.
That's a big jump. And even though those girls are a riot, a laugh riot, they were awesome in Bridesmaids. I mean, they had me rolling on the floor. I think they're going to bring it home good. But I'm scared, Nathan. I'm going to tell you, I'm scared. I cherish the Ghost Hunter, Ghostbusters and... I'm scared.
Yeah,
your thoughts.
I'm scared. Hey, speaking of Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Do you know what I discovered today?
No, what'd you discover?
See, I love when I surprise you because you're like, okay, now I'm frustrated. He's going to give me something I don't know.
Throw it out there.
For Christmas,
yeah.
Somebody who attended actually it was New Year's. Okay. Somebody who attended my New Year's party brought me a gift of Crystal Skull Vodka.
Oh, I thought you were going to say crystal meth. That's big out in your area. Crystal.
you know I'm a fan of vodkas.
Crystal
and
meth.
I can't say that Crystal Skull vodka is my favorite vodka, but I happen to know that it's made by Ray.
Uh-huh.
You know. Come on, Ray. Ghostbusters.
Right, Ray.
Eh? And
Dan Aykroyd. Yeah. You had to think about that for it. Ah.
I was waiting for you, but okay. And I finally open up the box and take it out. It's an autographed bottle.
From Dan Aykroyd. Oh, my God.
Somebody gave me an autographed bottle from Dan Aykroyd of Crystal Skull Vodka.
So you
and actually... I don't even know who gave me the bottle.
Is it, I mean, could you smudge it if you rub, don't rub your finger over it, but is it?
No, but it was funny because it was this squiggle on the top. I'm like, why did they write on it? And I'm literally looking at it all day going, why did, every time I walk by, I'm like, why would they write on it? Were they marking, is that supposed to be Merry Christmas?
Yeah.
You know, what the heck? And finally, it hits me what it is. And I type into the phone, you know, autographed pictures of Crystal Head Vodka.
Yeah.
And it pops up. And it's a little smaller than some of the, like, full signatures that are on some of the ones in the actual thing, but the loop in the bottom of his name is undeniable.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, it's an autographed bottle of Crystal Skull vodka. And so whoever gave me the autographed bottle of Crystal Skull vodka, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah.
I think I may know who did it, but I don't want to say the name and then find out I said the wrong name.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, that's an awesome, I mean, to think. I thought you were sick. Why are you hitting the vodka for?
No, I wasn't drinking the vodka. I was cleaning, you know, out of the house of stuff that was still stuffed in there from January.
Okay.
And I picked up and went, oh, my gosh, I never put this on the shelf. So I took the bottle out. I'm like, why'd they write on it?
Those bottles are so awesome, too. I had a buddy, good friend of the show, Scary Jerry. He worked for a liquor wholesale person, and he would go set up the stands and stuff like that in the stores. And when they came out with the Crystal Skull, they had a blue light, LED light base.
Mm-hmm.
And the skull would light up and everything. So he had one of those at his house where it was all blue and it lit up in the room, you know. And it was really cool. It was like something from, you know, Indiana Jones, Crystal Skulls, whatever. So,
hey, special, special shout out to Scary Jerry this week.
Yeah.
Because he finished his Master Mason's degree.
I heard that. Congratulations.
He's a brother Master Mason of mine now.
Yeah. You guys are both in the... One World Order, still hiding it really well, and your ranks are growing.
There is no Illuminati, Sean. I guarantee it.
No.
And I have not been told to say that.
I've been told that I haven't been told to say that. That's crazy. That's nuts. But, you know, it's funny that you brought that up, Nathan, because what's going on with the X-Files, man? Everybody wants to know. We've been on the edge of our seat for 6 weeks now, 6 or 7 weeks, whatever it was. We've had every known star of the X-Files on. And, of course, next week, Miss Annabeth Gish. She'll be coming on, guys. She's a big star of the X-Files genre there. And so we've had a lot of them come on. A quick fact here, Nathan. Say, do you know... Here, we're going to play Jeopardy. Name me one radio show, internet radio show, that had the only... insider, sneak peek, what would you say? Inside scoop. What do they call them? What do they call them when you get something that's...
I don't know what word you're going for, so I'm not going to leave dead air there.
Okay, let's... Well, you don't have to leave dead air. I'll continue to talk. You think, and I'll talk here. The Smoking Man came on the show, guys, and I'll go ahead and answer since Nathan doesn't want to play. The Smoking Man came on our show, and he gave us the inside scoop, kind of, sort of, to him coming back to the show. That was the only show. If you look it up anywhere, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show, we asked him directly, Nathan and I, we were playing around with this, him coming back to the X-Files, and he told us that he had gotten blown up. And, you know, Nathan said, well, maybe some aliens brought you back or something. Then I said, well, I'm going to call the people and bring you back in. And he was like, oh, yeah, well, yeah. And as you guys know, last week.
Good actor.
Yeah, last week he was, William B. Davis was back on the show. What did you think about the X-Files? You think it's good?
I am furious, Sean, and I'm not furious at the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm furious at the fans.
Oh, really? Okay. Right.
Because I have not seen the uproar that this requires.
All right.
They titled the show, This is the End.
Yeah, This is the End.
They put a huge cliffhanger at the end of it. And everyone is just assuming, oh, that must mean they're coming back.
Right.
No, they have not received, you know, any kind of verification. They're coming back, and people are not out there standing in the street yelling and screaming, give me my X-Files. I need more X-Files. I need to know where this is going. And if it doesn't continue because people are not following through, I'm going to be furious at you, public. I'm going to be mad.
Well,
I'm going to send you to bed without dinner.
I think it's safe to say that you and I have done our part to continue the X-Files.
We have tried.
Yeah, we have tried to bring it back. We've had almost all the stars on of the X-Files that came on. And
what did you think of the week before that where the lone gunman showed up?
I thought that was great. I thought they should have had a bigger... a bigger cameo than what they did there. The acid flashback thing. Yeah, that was something. But definitely, Agent Scully and Mulder meet the Werebeast. That was that was definitely right up my alley.
Yes, that was good old fashioned fun X-Files. I have to admit that.
Yeah,
but folks, start sending in the letters. Start posting on Facebook. I haven't seen one post on Facebook that says, spoilers. What the hell was that about? You've got to bring it back now. You can't do this to us. The networks aren't hearing anything. They're just going to be like, oh, people are done. They're finished. Forget it.
I think they heard things when, you know, they pretty much crashed the network ratings right up there with the Walking Dead. And that's what they were looking for. We know. We've been on TV before. And they're looking for everybody with the numbers.
Yeah.
They look at the first episode, the mid episode, and the very last to see if the people, if it was just a, you know, crazy of the week. Or if
they look to see if you started at the beginning and watched it all the way through. And they look to see the age groups that are watching, because as we learned, even though we hit our numbers on TV, our age group was too low, and therefore they couldn't sell us to the right advertisers. So, you know, it's important, folks. This is important. If you want your X-Files, stay with it.
Right. Now, it's funny. Agent Monica Reyes, she had a lot of FaceTime with Agent Scully in last week's episode and the final episode. And, of course, she'll be our guest next Sunday, guys. Miss Annabeth Gish, she'll be on the show. And she might be able to tell us a little bit more about what's going on there. So make sure you stay tuned for that next Sunday. But she was the one giving the cigarette-smoking man his cigarette through his throat hole.
Trachea tube.
Yeah, all that. Anyway, tonight's guest. We was talking about the American Werewolf in London. And who does? I mean, I think it's safe to say that's a classic movie, yes?
I think so.
All right. I just looked up a quick story before we go into the news. The history of the werewolf legend, Nathan. Oh, you know, a lot of people.
Please, tell me more.
They might not know where it came from. Werewolves, also known as lycanthropes, are legendary shape-shifting humans. As the name suggests, the shape these creatures take on is that of a wolf. The history of the werewolf legend has sprung up independently or spread to virtually every area of the earth. It's also one of the oldest legends of human monsters in recorded history. Where the legend originated can only be guessed by what humans have taken care to record. Their other name, lycanthrope, may also be a hint at the origin of this myth. And of course, now we'll get on to that, where, you know, that's actual mental condition, lycanthropy. Mm-hmm. It's actually a physical condition where people actually grow hair all over their body. You've seen these, right?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was lycanthropy. I thought lycanthropy was the mental condition. So you got me beat on that one.
I think lycanthropy is the mental condition. As far as the hair all over the body, I'm not sure what they call that one. But anyway, throughout history, there are records of the trials of confessed or accused werewolves. In fact, this is just like the witch trials here, Nathan, except with werewolves.
All right.
In fact, they were hunted, questioned, and executed in much the same way witches were. Oh, wow, there you go. Because often witches were accused of also being werewolves. These so-called werewolf trials give us a historical glimpse. See another show coming out on A&E. The werewolf trials. Anyway, the werewolf trials gives us a historical glimpse at rampant human belief in werewolves. Some of the accused were arrested because villagers needed someone to blame for dead livestock, or some other explainable occurrence, but others were accused because of actions far more sinister and less likely to be contrived. In 1521, we're going back here, Pierre Bergot, go ahead and ring the drink bell, guys. That means drink. Pierre Bergot and Michael Verdun were executed as werewolves. Historical records indicate that they were a serial killer team in 1573. Again, in France, another werewolf was executed. His name was Gilles Garnier, otherwise known as the werewolf of Dole, D-O-L-E. He was confessed serial killer. So there you go, Demon Hunter. Apparently,
I tell you.
Yeah, apparently these monsters.
Didn't you, as a kid, read a book that told you how to go out in the woods and become a werewolf?
Yeah, you remember that.
I remember. Dude, I remember everything you tell me. I just try to forget.
10 years on the air. So I did. You know, we all know our past. We grew up goofy, weird kids, and we liked ghosts and strange, weird monsters and stuff. And I used to go to the library all the time, and I would try to get books on paranormal stuff, ghosts, whatever, you name it. And right there, I forget where I was, but I found it. I forget the name of it, but it was a scary, like, historical documentation of witches and vampires and stuff like that. And in the very back, it had a spell for how to become a werewolf. Huh?
And you cast that spell, and you've had to shave twice a day ever since.
Yeah, no, I didn't cast the spell, but I thought, my God, that was probably in the children's section too, man. I don't know. I don't know, but that, yeah, I thought that, that's cool that you remember that, man. Anyway, yeah, they said you had to do something. You had to cut your hand and make a blood pact and sit in the woods and draw a circle and something would come meet you. And you would, it'd be the devil, basically, and you'd tell him. Anyway, fairy time's over. Nathan, you know what time it is? It's always fresh. It's always exciting. It's strange, weird, and it's straight from the G&D show vaults. And it starts right
now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Ghost Man, Sean B.
And that's me, Nathan S., a.k.a. the Demon Hunter.
And here's what's happening strange in your world.
That's right, folks. It's strange news, weird news that Sean and I take right out of the papers because we like the titles. We haven't read them, so we make a lot of mistakes. Every time we make a mistake, you take a drink. That's the G&D drinking game. Of course, if you're listening to us while driving in your car, please don't play the G&D drinking game. And if there's anything important going on in your life this evening, please listen responsibly.
This just in, radio host blows out kneecap while trying to bend it under the desk at the studio. Man, this is killing me. I'm trying to fit this big fat knee. It's all swollen and everything.
We should have set you up with like a little stool to sit your foot up on there, Sean.
No, I don't know. Anyway, you want me to take this first one?
Sure, go ahead.
This comes from our friends at the UPI. Thanks, guys, the UPI. Customs says woman smuggled half pound of cocaine in her vajayjay.
Aren't you glad I always find those titles that I know you're going to like?
This is one big ball of cocaine here, folks. New York, guys, February 26th, the UPI. Customs officers in New York said a woman returning from a trip in Jamaica was concealing half a pound of cocaine in her vajayjay. U.S. Customs and Border Protection said officers at JFK International Airport questioned Shakira Thompson when she returned to the United States on Sunday from a trip to Kingston, Jamaica, Mon. Yeah. The CBP officer said that Thompson admitted to vaginally inserting a foreign body. The egg-shaped object removed from Thompson's special spot turned out to be the bundle of about a half pound of cocaine. with an estimated street value of $10,000.
Huh? Oh, jeez.
That's one happy hoo-ha.
Woo-hoo!
Get it? Hoo-ha!
Hoo-ha!
This seizure is just another example of our CBP officers being vigilant. A lot of V names in this. I gotta be careful. Vigilant, you know. In protecting the United States from these distribution of this illicit drugs, said Robert Perez, director of the CBP's New York field operations. Thompson was turned over to the Port Authority Police Department and is facing state narcotic smuggling charges.
America's Port Authority, protecting Americans from vaginas.
There's one speedy hoo-ha right there. Hoo-ha!
Hoo-ha!
Hoo-ha! I'm glad.
Hey, Sean, speaking of the X-Files like we did earlier.
Yeah.
Eerie sound that is freaking out an Oregon town.
Oregon.
Like this comes to Oregon. Us from the Huffington Post. Okay. An eerie flute-like sound is driving one of the Oregon town's bananas. Aliens, ghosts, leaking gas pipes have all been, have a drink, folks, have all been thought of as possible explanations of this high-pitched whistle-like note heard from random times in Forest Grove over the past few weeks. But residents can't figure out where it's coming from, and experts are equally stumped. The noise strikes at all times of day and night, and lasts from 10 seconds to several minutes. I've been woken up 3 times, local resident Colleen Harris told KATU. It's almost like the sound of someone needs to change their brakes.
Oh.
Fire police and public works offices have investigated the noise that's plaguing the community of 22,500, about 25 miles west of Portland, but to no avail. Forest Grove Police Captain Mike Herb said that if someone is making the noise on purpose, then it was a city ordinance violation.
Oh.
At this point, we don't have the information that would lead us to believe that that's the case, Herb told the Washington Post. No. He added that some people thought it sounds like it might be the alien mothership warning of something to come. Melissa Moore, a spokeswoman for the Northwest Natural Gas, ruled out leaking pipelines as a reference valve, line, or a refill valve. We sent a tech out, and he spent the whole day investigating, Moore said. The spokesman for Forest Grove Fire and Rescue said that it was business as usual, although firefighters are calculating information about the sound. We aren't willing to make... have a drink, folks. We aren't waiting for it to make noise. We are going about our duties, the spokesman said. Yeah. Audio engineer Toby Colin, speaking of things stuffed up places, was drafted by Reuters to assist in the phenomenon, and he said the high pitch is ambiguous point of origin.
Ambiguous.
Was unusual. The high frequency like tone is from a very directional sound.
Okay.
Various low frequency sounds, which can seem to come from anywhere and everywhere at once, Collins said. Stresses he only listened to a poor quality recording. What surprises me is that the neighbors have been unable to locate where it's coming from, he added. It's not the first time that Forest Grove has been hit by such a sensation. Former residents report hearing similar sounds echoing through the night several decades ago. However, the cause back then was never found.
Okay.
The truth of the sound may be out there. Now we just need to find it.
Gotta find it. Hey, our buddies, you've heard of Flying Purple People Eater, right, Nathan?
They have, yeah, sure.
How about Flying Spaghetti Monster? Church gets okay to perform marriages.
It's about time.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it. But thanks, Danielle Yira from UPI, for getting us this one. Here we go, guys. Wellington, New Zealand, no less. Members of the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, otherwise known as Pastafarians. Anyway, registered their first official marriage celebrant in New Zealand. The group announced the news on its Facebook page. Although the first couple that was set to be married by the new celebrant decided to call off their wedding. Our happy couple made the wise decision after traveling together for several weeks to not tie the knot noodle. Not tie the noodle. That'll do it every time, guys.
Yeah?
Yeah. A wise decision, noted the minestrone. Not minister, minestrone. Tis always better to be alone, wishing you were knotted, than to be knotted and wishing you weren't. Amen. Amen. Yeah, it's supposed to be like amen.
Have a drink, folks.
Yeah, drink up, guys. But it's supposed to be like... Amen, but it's R in front of it. R-M-N.
Amen.
Sure, that's an Italian pasta thing. Anyway, the celebrant, referred to as a minestrone, will travel across the country to perform wedding services free of charge. Couples will only be required to pay for her travel expenses and make a donation of between $150 and $800 to the church.
That's not free of charge.
Right. They're only required to make donations. That's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, read the fine print. People. Anyway, most approved organizations are faith-based and cluster around well-known religious views. However, a number have what might be considered an alternative philosophy. These include yoga, Wicca, Scientology, heathen, druid, humanist, spiritualist healing, and Reiki. There you go, guys. If you want to get married or, you know, whatever, by the Flying Spaghetti Monster Church, there you can go. You can
God
go.
Is a flying spaghetti monster.
Flying purple people eater. Flying. I don't know where they got the. I guess they just make it up. Flying spaghetti monster.
Well, it's a old thing, Sean, where people used to discuss the fact that there was no more proof in God than there was proof in a giant flying spaghetti monster in the sky.
Now, who came up with that argument?
I don't know. I don't know who came up with it, but it's become a thing. So.
Yeah.
Hey, Sean, I think we only have a couple minutes left for us to do that thing we love to do.
You hear the music, guys. It's time for another G&D Show original series. Me, Nathan, and myself, we came up with it. It's called Rot Talk. Go ahead, Nathan.
Rot Talk. Thank you.
Where each week we scour the universe, or at least the world here where we live, and we try to find you everything we can. What happened last week, what we think's going to happen this week on the show. We know we love The Walking Dead. Nathan?
Rot Talk. Hey, Sean, what did you think of last week?
I thought last week is amping up. The sex scene heard around the world. Michonne and Rick, they got it on.
Oh, we forgot to warn people. Oh, no.
Yeah, we
Spoiler alert,
that's why
folks.
I said Nathan.
Spoiler alert. If you want us to not hear what happened last week or what's going to happen coming on, stick your fingers in your ear, blah, 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 blah. Go on, Sean.
Yeah, okay, we covered it. Now, did you see that thing on Facebook where it had Rick talking to Carl and Carl was on top of the roof eating the chocolate pudding? He said, hey.
I did see that.
Yeah, he said, hey, son, you're not the only one who likes chocolate pudding because, you know, him and Michonne got
love
it going.
Love is in the air. Didn't Rick's girlfriend just die?
Oh, I know it. Yeah, well, that was a fleeting thing. Summer dream, take me. Anyway, things are amping up. All of a sudden, Jesus has showed up yes. in the bedroom. And for our longtime listeners or our longtime followers of the comic books and stuff, Nathan, as you pointed out, my friend, a long time ago, the survivors is something we're going to see.
He's a harbinger, Sean. He's a harbinger of doom.
Is he part of, that's the question, is he going to be part of the survival crew that's going to eventually try to take over our group of Walking Dead people here or what? What's going on?
You know, I'm not going to go into the comic book end of that because they've messed me up with the comic book before, and I've followed the comic book and said that. But I do believe that he is a harbinger of the survivor, Sean.
Okay, well, there you go. A harbinger of things to come. It's not going to look good when stuff does happen. The laws.
How are they going to get the truck out of the lake?
I don't think the truck is going to come out of the lake. And if it does, I think it's going to be a goodwill gesture because from what I hear... Know, Mr. Negan shows up, and he likes to do favors for people. Real nice guy.
That's nice of him.
Yeah, real nice guy, nice. As long as you give your life to him and do exactly as he says and pay, you know, a percentage. Kind of like Caesar.
Yeah, well, he's got that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen tonight?
Lucille. Anyway, I really was mad at Rick and Daryl.
Yeah.
Because they threw the guy off the truck. They could have turned around and left, and they had the truck.
Right.
Why did they have to go after the guy?
I don't know. Well, the guy was on the truck. The guy stayed on top.
Yeah, and they slammed in the brakes. The guy fell off. He ran away. They could have turned around and driven away and lost him.
Yeah, they could have, but they chose not to. Rick's
and
good
it's
nature.
Their own fault. It's their own fault. You know, going that I see that in Rick and Daryl all the time, and I think it's going to be a big downfall. And bringing him back, I just think, was a mistake. But what are you going to do?
Well, he's had a couple times here that he could have killed two of our favorites. He could have killed Daryl the first time. He could have killed Rick, and he didn't. I mean, he basically stole the truck. He had the gun facing Daryl. He didn't kill Daryl. And now he woke up Rick in a very vulnerable state, naked, laying next to Michonne, and says, hey, Rick, we need to talk. So something's going on with the guy. It's going to be one heck of a twist.
Let's remember, too, Daryl has come across the survivors who were trying to escape and went back, and they didn't kill him either. They just took his stuff, and they came across the survivors in the middle of the road. They weren't going to kill our group, but they wanted their stuff.
That's right.
And this guy came along. He didn't want to kill the group, but he wanted their stuff. What does that kind of like lead you to think here?
Yeah, it leads you to, yeah, like they're trying one of these weird, hey, I'm your pal kind of things. It's all good. Let's join up, and it's not going to work out. So tonight, what I think is going to happen is we're going to start seeing, maybe not Negan yet, but we're going to start seeing, it's going to start opening up more to the hey.
I really did think we were going to get a glimpse of Negan last week, and we didn't get it. But that was the only thing I was really off on.
Well, it's got to be happening here soon, Nathan. But anyway, guys, tonight's guest, before we go to break, he's an American actor, made his professional debut in the New York Shakespeare Festival production of Hamlet. Since then, he's graced your he's graced your television screen and the silver screen, known for his work on Midnight Madness, Hot Dog the Movie, and, of course, the horror classic, An American Werewolf in London. Mr. David Naughton stops by tonight. We're very excited about that. Cannot wait, Nathan.
I'm excited, sir.
And I'm excited about The Walking Dead, too.
Yes.
I think it's going to be one for the books, but I think something's coming up that I'm not looking forward to. So
yeah, there's somebody else has got to die. I said it a couple weeks ago, somebody's got
to
die.
It has to happen. Guys, each week, we got to take a break and get David in here. But each week on the show, we play a band we know, we love. We support the little man on this show, the independent man. Tonight's band is, tonight's artist name is Monk Turner. Name of the song, I've Missed the Boat. Nathan?
Sounds like my life.
Shadow Nation, we'll be right back.
heavy. Seems like the party winding down. Friendship makes me feel stranded at sea. Everyone's moving on, and they don't have time for me. I've missed the ball, and it feels so lonely. Everyone is settling down, but I don't wanna give it up. Cause the life we once held dearly is the life I want to lead. Longing for lovers that long to be near to me. Wanting nothing more than a kiss. Love was a simple game. Sinking deep in the currents I've never known. Morning, the life that I thought you would live. It's time to let it go. Because life has more to give. I've missed the ball.
Hey, this is Ross Marquand, Aaron from The Walking Dead. You're listening to the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. I am not.
Hey, welcome back, Shadow Nation, to the one, the only Mystifying Oracle Radio, your Ghostman and Demon Hunter show. Tonight's guest, he's an American actor who made his professional debut in the New York Shakespeare Festival's production of Hamlet. Since then, he's brought thrills and chills to your television sets in the silver screen, best known for his work on such films as Midnight Madness, Hot Dog the Movie, and, of course, the acclaimed cult horror classic, An American Werewolf in London. Shadow Nation, please help us welcome to studio Mr. David Naughton. Dave, how's it going, buddy?
Good, thanks.
Hey, it's the American Werewolf, and he's not in London tonight. He's actually here in studio. It's a big night, Dave. It's a big night. Bear with us, will you?
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, very few times do you get an iconic actor like yourself, an iconic, to line up here and come in and talk to us about a show like American Werewolf in London and all the things that you've done. We went over how you got into the gigs, how you did the Dr. Pepper, the commercials, all the stuff. We want to get into all that. I always start out with your childhood. Were you a creepy kid? Did you like horror stuff? And, you know, because
creepy.
There had to be a passion behind it.
No. I mean, I can't really say I was a creepy kid. I mean, I enjoyed Halloween. You know, that was a big deal. But I didn't, you know, I grew up in Connecticut, pretty straightforward in West Hartford, Connecticut, the youngest of three, my older sister that I was very close to, and my older brother too, who's also an actor, James Naughton, people know.
Yeah.
But we enjoyed Halloween, I guess, but I wouldn't say it was, you know, horrific in any way.
Yeah. So no werewolves and severed heads, stuff like that, just your normal.
Yeah, no, there wasn't any really. My parents were teachers, so we were pretty straight laced folks. Growing up back when in Connecticut, but although I've been in California for really longer, as I think about it, been in California longer than I was in Connecticut, but I still consider myself, you know, a guy from back east.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say,
you're a Connecticutian?
Yeah, well, you know, I went to school in Philadelphia, I went to college, and then I studied acting in London, and went to a drama school there called Lambda, London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art. And so, you know, and then returned to New York to start just a pretty classic, what I was hoping was a classical career, but that didn't exactly last too long. I did one Shakespeare play, and then I was off into pop culture.
You went down into fandom.
You got to pay the rent, right?
Yeah, you know, you just... I think people say, yeah, I have it all planned and how I'm going to, you know, how my career is going to go. I think that's really it's unusual to hear people say, yeah, I planned the whole thing. It just sort of, you know, you jump in and you see where it takes you. It's really how it happened with me.
Yeah. Now, you know, like you said before, you're a Connecticut kid. You grew up. When you went out to L.A., And London and all this stuff. Do you miss it? I mean, do you miss the East Coast being back, like the falling leaves and the changing seasons? Do you still love that stuff at heart?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, you know, I get a kick. I live out in the Palm Springs, California area where it's pretty nice, 340 days a year. And, you know, I get a kick out of looking at the temperature this time of year in both you know, the New York, Connecticut area where my brother lives and where my sister lives in Minneapolis. So I say, hey, how's that winter going?
Right.
So I'm out in Connecticut,
and I'll tell you, the winter's going just fine this year.
That's where you are? No.
Yeah, I'm in Danbury.
Oh, what do you know? Yeah, my parents lived in Newtown even.
Oh, I used to live in Newtown, yeah.
Yeah, how about that? So, yeah, but I'm a long way from there, and... to say I miss it, no, I go back in the, you know, August. We have sort of a family reunion at my brother's house in Weston, Connecticut. And other than that, you know, it's now just kind of a nice place to visit.
You know, it's interesting. You said mom and dad were both teachers. So you said both your parents were teachers, right?
Yes, that's right. That's how they started out. Yeah.
You know, and most people that get into acting, you hear a lot about their family, and either their mother was an entertainer or their father. How did that start for you? How did they, how did you get into
it? We just had really good, this was back when music and all those things that are sometimes taken out of schools these days, There was just a lot of really good programs offered, particularly vocal programs, singing, musical, instruments. I was in a choir in high school where our choir director was just really had a flair for musical theater. So we would do, the high school musicals. And as did my brother too. I think that's what really got us exposed. Our first theatrical productions were in high school musicals. And we said, hey, this is pretty good. And I went to the University of Pennsylvania and studied, I was sort of an English literature major, but I was definitely into performing groups in college as well. There was a thing called Penn Players where we were doing plays, and it was my first legitimate sort of serious play that I was in, and went, wow, I kind of like comedy, but I just enjoy theater. And so it was then that I decided that I wanted to study theater, and why I applied to drama schools in England, thinking, we're better to see, some pretty good theater and study traditional classical acting than in London. So I went over to London for a couple of years as a student and had a great time and saw everybody back in that era. I mean, all the great actors I would see in the West End, the Laurence Olivier's and Charles, Laurence Olivier. I'm trying to think of the guy from... I'm trying to think of, he was in A Man for All Seasons, but I'm blanking on him. Anyway, I saw everybody, and they were just fantastic inspiration to return to New York and start auditioning, which is what I did and how I started.
Oh, yeah.
Paul Scofield, that's what I was thinking about.
Schofield. Like Thomas Moore, that's
Paul
right.
Scofield, John Gielgud, Alec Guinness, all those guys.
Alec Guinness. Oh my goodness, man!
I remember the thing I remember most about A Man for All Seasons was, of course, Orson Welles. So,
right. Well, it was fun to see these guys in the West End, on stage, because they were. And in fact, at our school, we had Alec Guinness come and John Gielgud came to and talked to the acting students. So you see these guys walk in and actually talk about their careers as a student. It was pretty inspiring, to say, wow, they're real people. They actually started, they weren't famous when they started, right. They just built a long career and they did some of the same kinds of things that we were hoping to do in terms of our training. And so it was inspirational, I'd say. And as I said, there's so much theater in London and it was pretty inexpensive as a student. So I was going to theater, living, breathing, being, acting every day. It was really kind of it's really the best of, as I think back on it, because once you have to start sort of, supporting yourself and trying to make a living, it's not as, there's not the romance of, thinking about being, on a Broadway stage. It's like, oh gosh, I got to actually go and go to this audition and wait in line for an open call. And, the practical part of it kicks in. And
then one day somebody calls and says, would you mind being in a Dr. Pepper commercial?
Yeah, that really was. I was doing what every aspiring actor in New York was like to do, which was work, be a waiter in a restaurant because the hours are flexible. And I worked on this cool little restaurant. And I remember getting a call saying, you want to go in for these musical commercials? There's heavy dance. I went, heavy dance? I'm not a dancer. Mm-hmm. But I said, well, go in for it anyway. It's for Dr. Pepper. That's three spots. So I went in and I was there with, in New York, when you want dancers, they literally come out of the woodwork. There's all kinds of professional dancers. And I went to the audition in jeans and a t-shirt and sneakers. And we did this sort of moves where they give you a number. It's similar to like what used to be a chorus line was about, where, this is how dance auditions happen. You're given a number and they watch you and then they call out your number and say, these guys, please stay. And the other guys are free to go. And my number got called and I got to stay. And then I had another call back. And over the course of a couple of months, I was chosen as this guy who was going to be their lead singer, lead dancer. They had already cast somebody, they got like a studio voice to do the jingle. And I said, wait a second, I got to like record that too if I'm going to be the guy.
Yeah.
So I had to audition for that as well. And, but you know, it did, it changed my life. We had a 22 day shoot, if you can imagine,
for
a 60 second two 30 second commercials and a 60 second commercial. But it was a lot of travel from New York to New Orleans and Dallas, St. Louis and San Francisco. So it took 22 day shoot. And I was like, wow, I've since done, you know, little independent movies that took less time than it did to shoot 2 minutes of commercials.
Well, Dave, a lot of people,
Sean, that 22 days, that's what we took to film 4 episodes of a TV show.
Right. Right. Well, you know,
yeah, I know.
A lot of people don't know this about you, Dave, but you were a disco king, a disco god, with Making It, Dave and Not Making It, man. You had, was that a one-hit single, or what was that?
Well, it was the title song for a series that I did on ABC, that this was back when Saturday Night Fever was a big hit.
Oh, yeah.
So they wanted to spin it off into a TV series at ABC. They had all the music and rights to anything that Saturday Night Fever had, but they did write an original song for the title song for the series, which, so I tried to, you know, talked my way into that audition as well and got to sing with the guys who wrote the song. It was Freddie Perren and Dino Ferraris, two guys who were very successful at the time with Peaches and Herb, you know, when they had that song Reunited and Shake Your Groove Thing. And so they wrote this title song for the series, and I got a chance to record it. It was released, and it took off. I mean, it was crazy. It went to number 5 in the top 40, and I was, you know, trying to promote the series at the same time, which didn't make it, but the song was, there was just no stopping it.
I was going to bring it in the background there, Dave, while you were talking there.
Well,
careful, Sean.
You've done your homework.
Yeah, we'll be it. I can't believe I didn't have that preloaded. My God, I missed my cue.
David, it couldn't have been all bad doing Dr. Pepper commercials, though, because rumor has it that's where John Landis saw you and decided to use you for American Werewolf.
Well, you know, I think he did. He was certainly familiar with those spots. And he was, as he's since said, I mean, we've done a couple of panels over the course of many years since that film, we've done the film. And he said that he wanted guys that were likable guys, and he remembered me from these spots and thought that if I could, you know, be a likable character in a 30 or 60 second spot, then it would be something that he thought, you know, he could do in his movie. So yeah, I think it was from those commercials that he saw me, and I went in and had one of these remarkable moments in your life where you just sort of sit down with a guy named John Landis, who I knew from, of course, Animal House was a big hit, as was the Blues Brothers. So I certainly knew who he was, as I got a drive-on pass at the Universal lot where he had his office. And, you know, I was meeting him about this movie. But it really literally was sitting down and having a chat with a young guy who was just hilariously funny and very engaging and just a nice interview. And at the end of it, he goes, well, look, you know, here, take the script, read it, and call me tomorrow. I said, call you? I mean, you want me to call you? So I did. I called him the next day. And he goes, well, do you want to be a werewolf? I mean, it was really that simple. It wasn't like an elaborate screen test or having to go, you know, having done these commercials for so many years. There's always a huge committee in an advertising agency of how they get anything done. There's always a huge committee that makes those decisions, where this was just John Landis, his project. He was the guy. We hit it off, and he cast me. It was crazy.
You know, and you've done everything. I mean, you do voice work, you've danced, theater, and of course Hollywood with the movies and television shows. But tell us about your voiceover stuff, like when Marvel came out with the Ultimate Alliance game. You know, because my kids love the games. I've gamed it up before. How do you prepare for something like that? Is that a huge jump for you, going from the big screen to a video game box, doing a voice deal?
No, not really. I mean, you know, it's just another sort of, you know, leaving your imagination to creating a voice that, you know, you audition for. Either you put it on tape or you go in it live, you know, and stand in the studio while they're in there and they listen to a character. Not really. Sometimes they show you an actual drawing of the character that you're voicing, or sometimes they just give you a description of the character in terms of his age. It's all, you know, very age related, young guy or something, you know. And so you try to come up with a voice that's, you know, is believable, certainly. They want a credible voice. They don't want it real cartoony. And if you get it, it's so much fun because you're literally going in and putting it down, you know, line by line. You don't get a lot of time with the script. So there's a sense of being not really improvisational because it's all very scripted and timed, but you kind of have to work and read fast. And it's just, it's really a fun gig. I mean, so many people, believe me, so many actors would love to get into doing animation. If not, you know, voiceover work in film or television, it's just like the most fun you can have, really. And you don't have to, you're not on camera, so you don't have to, you know, there's not 1 minute in makeup or a makeup chair.
You show up in your bathrobe and your slippers.
Yeah, you just show up in jeans and go, let's do this.
Right.
And knock it out. So I did one thing, which was pretty interesting. It was a Korean movie. So they were dubbing it. It was into English. So the director was a woman who was Korean and she cast me to play two different roles that we were doing in English. And she thought it would be helpful if I heard the original, soundtrack before each line. And so she'd play the character's line in Korean. I went, I don't speak Korean. I'm just, you know, this doesn't really help, but she insisted. I think
she
it was more for
to
her
hear
to
the inflection of the voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just in Korean and you go, okay, but I'm going to now interpret it as a, you know, speaking in what would be American English. And I think it was really more for her to hear it, the original line, and then hear my version and see if they were compatible because I didn't speak it, but it certainly made the session like twice as long. And you go, okay, you're paying. You know, I'll be here as long as you want.
I can't imagine after American Werewolf in London that you would regret having to spend any time in makeup.
Yeah, I know. It was, you know, Rick Baker was, we knew he was a very special, incredibly talented guy, but nobody really knew what this process was. I mean, it wasn't like there were any actors I could call and go, hey, do you know this Rick Baker? What's it going to be like? What am I going to go through? I was like the first for a lot of that, you know, the guinea pig, so to speak. Even in his shop with his young guys who were all sort of apprenticing him, and they, many of whom went on to have careers of their own in makeup, I'd say to him, hey, so you guys done this before? Yeah, once. He did it. Sean did it, and he's okay. I mean, because you really don't, you know, you can't prepare yourself for going in and being put you know, all this slop, this quick drying cement on your head and, you know, having to do molds of your face and arms and body.
Yellow contacts.
Yeah, that's always fun too. Then, you know, they're coming in with these full, you know, size glass lenses. Rather, this is even before soft lenses, you know. So, I mean, I like to paint the picture of what we went through. But even to this day, you know, when Rick Baker's asked about it, he goes, oh, yeah, we tortured those guys. I heard him say it, you know.
And he was annoyed that they only gave them 7 seconds of the face on TV or on the movie.
I know. Well, that was the thing. And then when we would shoot the actual transformation scene, which was at the end of the film, we'd wrapped everything else. Everyone was wrapped except for the transformation was left to be done. And we would be, you know, literally hours and hours. I think it was 10 hours at one for a couple of days in makeup. We'd come out and we'd start shooting. And Landis, who's totally, you know, just impassioned about it, goes, okay, what else does it do? They go, Rick would be like, well, I mean, that's it. He goes, okay, we're wrapped. He goes, wait a minute. We're only shooting for 20 minutes. He goes, what else does it do? Meaning, you know, whatever stage of the makeup. And he says, well, if that's all it does, then we're done, you know? And so then we'd go back and take hours of taking it off. But it was really all about the preparation. And Rick was there wanting to see, you know, I don't think any of us really knew, particularly Rick, how it was going to look on film. So they were very anxious to see what the dailies looked like as quickly as they could. And we were editing the film as we went along in London. So there was, you know, the challenge was to do it in broad daylight, no effects, no, you know, no clouds of mystery and smoke and dark. You wanted it. John wanted it in broad daylight. Watch this thing. Watch this guy turn into a creature right before your very eyes. And that was the challenge. that Rick Baker had. And you know, it's like 30 whatever years ago tonight, the Academy Awards, he won his first Oscar for it.
Yeah, which he should have, absolutely. But Dave, you know, a lot of people have said that, well, that was the first on-screen live transformation in a werewolf movie like that. I mean, it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And you know, Griffin Dunn's makeup was phenomenal. I know Rick talks about Griffin not being particularly thrilled about having to come in and looking more and more decomposed every time he came to work. But they go, well, that's in the script, you know, and you know, how gross and gruesome it was supposed to look, and the number of hours that he had to sit in the chair as well. So there were, you know, there was all kinds of firsts for us, and we had no idea what we were in for, and it was pretty thrilling. All we kept thinking was, if there's a sequel, we'll be prepared in dealing with a renegotiation.
Right.
No. But nobody knew, certainly, that we, you know, still be talking about it today. So it's pretty exciting.
Now, I understand that the British Office of Actors didn't want to let Griffin into England to film the movie.
Well, any of us, you know, any Americans, they're so strict with their British equity, you know, and their restrictions. There was a thought of it being scouting locations in France and, you know, changing the name and not being in London. And yet there were all these other jobs. All the other actors are all West End British actors who Landis saw going to theater and picking guys literally off the stage or, you know, meeting them in interviews, and all the crew, of course, and all the technicians, everybody were British. So it was really creating a lot of jobs. And yet there were like 4 work permits that they were so reluctant to hand out for John and Rick and me. And in fact, all his crew didn't get work permits. They came in sort of on the sly as with tourist visas, you know, just going to be staying and visiting. What are you doing here? Oh, we're just, you know, no, we're making a werewolf movie. You know, they were like, we're just visiting our friends, you know, and all the crew were just there, you know, on the, as, you know, visitor visas. And the rest of us, the four of us.
Oh, gee, we're here. Let's go check out where they're filming the movie.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's crazy. I don't know as the legend has it, they were literally bringing in a lot of the appliances and things in suitcases. If you can imagine, just check baggage. You open them up and there's wolf heads and legs and hairy arms, you know, and that was really how the stuff, it was so informal in the way that the makeup department, the special makeup effects were handled for this film. That was certainly soon to change because, you know, Rick became, you know, an instant celebrity himself and won the Oscars and then had more and more people as for the bigger projects that he took on where he would have these whole studios. And he did a couple of more movies in England, I think, where he was sort of the head guy and they gave him a whole stage full of makeup, whereas it was a little different than the first one he did.
I wanted to know what John was smoking when he came up with your dream sequence in America.
Yeah, Yeah, the thing is about him, he wrote this script, you know, when he was 21 years old, working as a production assistant on Kelly's Heroes, a movie being shot in Europe in the late 60s. Yeah. Or maybe it was early, mid-70s, I don't know exactly when. But it was, you know, an opportunity for him as a young guy to write a screenplay, and that was the screenplay we shot. I mean, these sort of Nazi demons and these dream sequences were all scripted. It was exactly the script that we shot. There were a few maybe ad-libs when Griffin and I were out on the moors in the beginning where we got to maybe tell a couple of jokes. But overall, we have to credit John for writing the screenplay and shooting the film that he wanted to shoot that he had written years before. So
let's go inside the actor's studio here, and I just want to know, what was he trying to convey with the Nazi werewolf soldiers?
The Muppet Show's evil.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, you know, I think part of his whole thing is, you know, I mean, the idea of that, what could be the scariest things for a Jewish kid growing up, you know, which is what John's, is the fact that they might as well make these guys put German helmets on them and make them Nazis. And but not now, let's just make it, you know, one more step into, you know, now these guys are not even human, they're demons. And so that was, I think, where that probably that reference came from. But it was funny watching these guys make these masks and then putting them on British stuntmen who would come out. And I go, hey, how could this guy have this giant dagger that he's got to my throat? I go, how is it in there? He goes, a bit hot and I can't see very well. I go, oh, good. Good. This is going so well.
Bloody hell. No, but I got to ask you, Dave, and I know we're running out of time, but so many people, including myself, have grown up, and, you know, I'm a child of the 70s, too, but grew up on The Howling and American Werewolf. And at the very beginning, so many people have said, and this has been said over and over again, that you guys set the scene for the best opening to a werewolf horror film. When you guys are on the foggy moors at night, the slaughtered lambs in the background, you know, and what we see, and your mind runs away with it on a late Friday night holding your popcorn while you guys are walking across the moors. Can you walk us through a day on set, like outside the slaughtered lamb, across the moors? What was the moors? Was that inside the studio?
I heard that a lot of that was actually improv by you guys.
That's what he was saying.
Well, no, it wasn't. John had written a lot of that thing about us talking about our girlfriends or what were we doing out here? You know, what is our plan? We're supposed to be going on a moor. This is going to be fun. And then talking about old girlfriends. And, you know, those are all things. And people that he mentioned in them, like old former girlfriends, were actually people in his life that he actually used their names, you know, which was sort of fun. Debbie Klein and these two sort of maybe old girlfriends that he had crushes on. So this was all his scripted stuff. The moors were really supposedly in northern England, which was, you know, just a wasteland of and scary and with particularly bad weather. Although it was funny, we were shooting out in Windsor, behind Windsor Castle, you know, out on the grounds, which were part of the royal grounds in Windsor, primarily because there were no homes built around the area. So, of course, there wouldn't be any lights. You wouldn't see it. So they could do almost a 360-degree pan in total darkness because we were way out in this field that we got permission. Oh, yeah. But the weather was so mild that they had to bring in rain machines, if you can imagine, in England, where it rains every 10 minutes. So for a lot of those scenes, we're out there, they're actually using rain machines, you know, turning it up. Well, we're going, does it have to be pouring? Couldn't it just be like drizzling? Why do we have to be, you know, totally soaked in this? You know, so there'd be that practical, you know, quality. When we're in the zoo, it's actually the Regent's Park Zoo, which was actually going to be opened at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning. And we were supposed to be done and wrapped by like 8 in the morning. Well, things never happen really quickly on a movie set. And so there I am streaking around this real zoo, and they opened it. And I looked over, and there, you can see in a couple of scenes, there are people in the background. I'm going, who are they? Are those extras? They go, no, the zoo's open. I'm going, wait a minute. What do you mean the zoo's open? And I'm, you know, there at 40 degrees, sitting behind a bush, stark naked, going, I don't remember this being in the script.
But hazard pay.
and then, of course, you wake up in a cage full of wolves. So
right. The wolf cage. Another wonderful evening going, oh, gosh, we're going to shoot the wolf scene tonight. So let's want to go meet the wolves. I go, not really. But, you know, not that they're going to remember me. You know, we're going to build some sort of rapport so that when we actually shoot the scene, it's going to go so well. Because they say, you know, no fast movements, no loud noises. I go, no fast movements. That's the whole point of the scene. I wake up, see it, I'm in a cage, and I get the hell out of here as fast as I can. And so we did a one taker.
I was
going to
say, that's a one take shot if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, so you bet it was. I was glad we got it done in one take, and I'm glad the set didn't break, although it started to pull apart as I was scaling the side. This sort of wall that they were sort of made, you know, for me to go up and over. I just said, I don't know how, but I will get up and over that thing. So let's roll and get this over with. Because these wolves, you know, these are real wolves. They're going, are they tame? They go, well, no wolves are tame, but they've been fed. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
They will stop eating you when they're finished.
I got to ask, what was your problem with Prince Charles's sexuality?
I know. Well, any of that stuff, you know, because we're out there in a real location, and you can't, you know, so I'm out there screaming about Prince Charles and Queen Elizabeth and all these things, going, this will definitely get you arrested, you know. And the actor that they hired to be the English Bobby was so good. I said, you sure you're not a, because you just seem to me to be just the perfect, you know, English Bobby. But, you know, you can't do that so much anymore, I don't think. If you tried doing that these days in London, it'd be a little different.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I got one last question for you, Dave-O, and it's...
Okay.
What about you using real numbers, man? When did the lawsuits roll in on that? When you're putting out, you're calling back home to Rhode Island, you put out actual phone numbers? What happened with that? Anything?
Oh, well, no, I think, you know, I'm sure that they clear, you know, like anything, that they have a legal department that clears a number.
Right.
It was like a 516. It was supposed to be out in Long Island and New York, and I'm in a phone booth calling, yeah, it's 556-1212. I mean, all these numbers are supposedly cleared, I think. But I know, and I have met fans over the years who said, you know, I called that number. I went, you did? I mean, there are people that have, you know, studied this film and have tried to do, you know, just all kinds of weird things like that, you know. I mean, and there's Paul Davis, who is a very interesting young British guy who did the documentary Beware the Moon, which was added because of John got this short little movie where Paul Davis, you know, interviewed everybody that worked on the film and did kind of a documentary on the making of American Werewolf. He calls it Beware the Moon. It's on one of the newer DVD releases as a bonus scene. But it's runs probably longer than the movie itself.
Yeah.
This guy is, you talk about in-depth research on a little movie that none of us thought would ever be, you know, get the sort of notoriety that it did, lives on. Over the course of this year, I'll probably still be showing up in a couple of cities around the U.S. at these horror conventions with my 8x10s, meeting fans and hearing pretty much the same things. I was 7 years old and I had to go. I was watching it at my friend's house and I wouldn't walk home. I had to call for a ride because I didn't want to walk home alone. And I went, yes, that's all part of the deal. No extra charge for
that's why we do it, young folks. Yeah.
That's
well,
right.
I tell you what, Dave, I'm going to ask you to hang on the line 1 second. We got to say thanks to our sponsors and pay the bills and stuff. But, man, you bet. I love you to death. We love you. You're awesome. And you know what? You're truly a master of horror. I mean, you've done a lot, but you always come back to horror. Twilight Zone, you know, sci-fi, American Werewolf. You've done so many things. And this horror has to be your favorite genre, yes?
Well, it certainly, you know, is. I always have to reserve judgment when it comes to CGI, you know, which I think can be overused. But if it's, you know, with good old-fashioned makeup, it gives a lot of latitude for actors to interpret their roles, and it can be a whole lot of fun to do.
You're right, absolutely. Nathan, do you have anything else for Dave?
I just wanted to shout out to you, Dave. One, it wasn't a silver bullet at the end, was it?
No, that was a thing, too, we were talking about, going, hey, how about a sequel, The Silver Bullet? And Landis goes off on these crazy tirades about, this silver bullet thing is it's an invention of Hollywood and Universal. There's no such thing about silver bullets and da-da-da. And we went, okay, John, easy. Don't rattle that cage.
Don't matter.
Well, okay, that kind of ruins it for me. I was really hoping for a sequel, and you know what you were saying about CGI before. I'm not going to go into it, but you know, American Werewolf in Paris, a little too much CGI in that one for me. I liked the old fashioned.
Yeah, and in many films where they just said, "Hey, look, we spent a lot of money. I'm sure it's expensive to do, so let's just you know," and it doesn't necessarily make it better for the film.
Any talks about remakes with American Werewolf?
There is, you know, apparently John Landis thinks, and I think he's made a deal for somebody that optioned the possibility of a remake. I would, you know, be interested to know what they were going to try to accomplish in a remake.
I see.
But,
Dr. Kessler in this
maybe
one.
maybe at this point they'll see me for the doctor.
Yeah,
so
we'll
see.
That's what I'm saying.
It wasn't a silver bullet, so you've been living out on the moors all this time. And
oh, I know. We had all kinds of scenarios. Yeah, we had a bunch of scenarios where we were trying to, and I think John himself was thinking about writing something at one point, but just said, you know, I'm happy with this one, and I'll let it go at that.
Beware the Moors. Dave, could you stay on the line 1 second?
Sure, you bet.
All right.
Stay off the Moors.
Stay off the Moors. Nathan, what do you say we pay the bills, buddy?
If we gotta, we gotta.
You know, that was iconic, though. You gotta love the werewolf movies, everybody.
Oh. And it's just been a line of them forever, and they all started here.
That's it, guys. Hey, special thanks to all our homes, all our sponsors, Stitcher, Smart Radio, Planet Paranormal, Attentive Home Healthcare. If you're in Indianapolis, good people ready to help the ones you love. Twitch, YouTube, iTunes. Guys, we're everywhere. From the haunted back roads of America, this has been another exclusive G&D show interview. Don't go changing America. You know we won't. Demon Hunter.
Because we love you.
Night, guys.